Welcome to the Bessart Sands Outdoor Heritage Council meeting for Thursday, November the 5th. Apologize that we're a few minutes late here, but I'd like to take this opportunity to say thank you to a number of folks. First of all, Julie, for prompting us to get out and meet up outside of St. Paul, and then also having a tour this morning, and to our staff for helping to make all of those arrangements for the tour and also for this meeting outside of the Capitol complex. And then to all of the folks who helped to make the tour so interesting and very helpful to us to see some of what has been accomplished with the monies that the citizens are putting forth into this council and the fund. So thank you to everyone involved for that. Any other members want to make a comment with regard to that at this time? Member Blackburn?
Yes. Are you on?
I believe they are all on. I think so.
I think you got to speak closer.
You got to stand closer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I only had an idea. Everybody else kind of went along with it, and obviously the staff and all the people that were involved in planning made it happen. But it was great, and I'm just very thankful and feeling like it helps me really put all these projects in perspective a little bit more and reinvigorates, you know, kind of the passion about the work that we're doing and seeing all the accomplishments. So thank you to everybody that helped.
Thank you. Anyone else that wish to make a comment at this time? If not, we'll move to the agenda and have approval of the agenda as presented, unless there's some additions or deletions that someone wants to make. Motion by Member Kingston to approve the agenda as presented. Discussion? All those in favor of the motion to approve the agenda as presented, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion is carried. Agenda is approved. Thank you. We'll move next to the minutes of the October 6th meeting. The motion would be in order to approve those minutes if so inclined. Motion by Member Kingston to approve the minutes for October 6th meeting as presented. Discussion on the motion or the minutes. Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion to approve the minutes as presented signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion is carried. Minutes are approved. Thank you. Any members that have conflicts with regard to today's agenda, if they wish to state at this time? Not seeing or hearing any, we will move past item 3 and go to the Executive Director's report.
Mr. Chair, members, just few things to go over here with you for basically some housekeeping items. First of all, the draft, let's see what I have here. We have the current calendar and also the draft calendar on the back side of it in the packets. A couple of things to draw your attention to. At the last council meeting, there was a suggestion that Dr. Peter Sorensen be asked to come and speak to us in the future on AIS. We contacted him. He based on his schedule, what looked like the best opportunity was the February 11th date for him. So we're going to plan on that at this point. And because of that February 11th, we will hold the January 7th, at least from a staff standpoint, we'll hold the January 7th meeting as council meeting and then reserve the January 21st in case there is committee work that needs to be done on RFP or call criteria or something else. So we'll keep those on the calendar at this point, both of them, and just so you know, that's the way staff will be looking at them for now. The other change was on the previous draft, there was June 30th listed as a council meeting. A suggestion was made to accommodate potential long July 4th weekend by moving that to June 29th, Wednesday, instead of on Thursday. So we've put that into this current draft. And again, this is just a draft to remind everybody. So if you see other problems or have questions on it, please bring those up. December meeting will actually be when we're approving this agenda or this draft calendar. If there are any questions on that, we could bring those up right now, or we could go through my couple items and then we can have a rest of the questions. With hands going up in the air. There's a notice of minor conveyance or conversion in your packet, and that is from the DNR regarding the St. Louis County regarding the property in St. Louis County. It's a proposed county road bridge project that will be in 2016 will impact a little less than 9/10 of an acre of land, Pinto land, over which the state holds conservation easement. It was funded by Outdoor Heritage Funds. It's a minor conveyance. It's the first one after we have new adopted procedures that allow the executive director to go ahead and allow that conveyance upon notice of the members and the legislative authorities. So after 15 days after this, pending no objections, that notice for that notice period, there will be approval of this minor conveyance. So unless you all have questions or if you have concerns, please let me know. We can bring them up here as well. Last thing I had was just a quick update for you on the land acquisition report that's due by staff by the 15th of January to the legislature. It continues to prove challenging, but especially the tax record portion, but it's going ahead and it's progressing, I think, quite nicely. I want to make special thanks to the project and program managers across the state who have helped us already with a number of different tweaks and data input suggestions as well as facts, and we really appreciate all the help you've given us already. We still hope to have a draft by the December 3rd meeting, but I think that's probably a bit optimistic. So to have a good draft, so it probably will be in January meeting, so you'll be seeing almost the final draft right before it goes to the legislature. And I think that's all I had at this time, Mr. Chair.
Questions for the Executive Director at this time? Thank you, Mark. We'll move to item 5 on the agenda and discussion with regard to the call criteria. An item in your packet. Sure, Sandy. Would you care to give us a little background on the call?
As you all know, we will be issuing a call in April for the next round of funding. And on page 3 of the attached call, we have the criteria that's been used in the past in evaluating those proposals. So we're just giving the council an opportunity if they would like to review the criteria or review the call and make changes to those things prior to the next RFP going out. Just want to have a discussion to get some direction on how the council feels about that.
Thank you. Member Blackburn.
Mr. Chair, thank you and the staff for bringing this forward. I, for one, would like to have it reviewed. And there's a few reasons for it. And I think, you know, we continue to learn more about habitat outcomes and the things that we're looking for. Our plan hasn't really been evaluated and to incorporate any of those new ideas or new pieces of information since the first one was written. And I also believe that some of the evaluation criteria, particularly looking at the projects we looked at today, our criteria number two, does it have rare, threatened, and endangered species inventories? There's very few of the projects we've seen today that would get any kind of evaluation that works for that. You're taking farms and turning them into habitat. They don't get points for that. Biological survey, they're going to get very low points on that. So I feel like those kind of questions really skew against prairie, except for acquisition of pure prairie, not restoring prairie. And I think we need to look at what that means for overall where we're going. The prairie is obviously a huge passion, and for me, as well as I think our most threatened resource, and I think the way that we evaluate, as well as what our priorities are in our plans, need to reflect more towards that. And I don't think just because you're restoring a prairie from a farm, you should have be biased against. And I think that those questions do that.
Member Hartwell.
Julie, I don't disagree with you on that. On the other hand, when there's an opportunity to protect native prairie before it needs to be restored because it's been broken, to me that seems like a slightly higher priority than restoring what was prairie and needs to be prairie again. And so, the stuff we saw today, there's no question we should be doing that work. But if we have the opportunity to preserve stuff before it is degraded and destroyed, you'd want to do that first. If you had two equal projects, I guess. And so I think when we were doing this initially, that was the thinking. And I don't have any problem rethinking it. But I'd like to make sure that we do it in a way that doesn't negate the priority of preserving prairie before it's destroyed.
Everyone here, Member Hartwell? I tried to use
it. You want me to say it again?
No.
Thank you. I can't remember what I said.
Member Blacker.
I agree with that and concur with that 100%. And that's why I think they do need to be pulled out and evaluated again. And I think all things being equal, you're right. Having purchasing something that is already in that state is the best thing. But when you're looking at scoring across the entire state, all different sections, every single 1.5 points matters. And so all things are not equal, and we need to figure out how do we, if we're looking at 1.5 point difference between an acquisition of a native forest versus a native prairie, that's one thing. But if you're looking at turning a farm into a prairie, and how that ranks next to a forest that hasn't had any impact and still has endangered species and still, you aren't really weighing them accurately, I don't believe.
Other thoughts or concerns with regard to the call? So I hear Member Blackburn asking for a review, and I guess we might take a couple different approaches to that. One, we could have staff prepare some information for us to consider, or we could have a committee of the council get together and bring forth some suggestions. Thoughts from the council with that regard? Member Kingston.
Give me both of them. One other source that I think we might benefit from is from our partners, some of whom, most of whom are in the audience. I'd like to hear what their comments or complaints or suggestions for improvement might be on the criteria. You know, they're judged against it, and their perspective might bring up something that none of us ever thought of. So if there's a way to solicit their opinion without making the mistake of knowing who's responsible for putting them together, I would appreciate hearing from our partners. At this stage, our criteria, you know, now that we've been doing this for 7 years, obviously matured the process, and I'd like to see what everybody else thinks.
So one of the things that I've always thought we should try to figure out how to add to our criteria is what I'll call the bang for the buck. What are the really unique projects that, you know, you go through the scoring criteria and it doesn't give you the opportunity to say this one's a game changer, this one's unique and different and stretches the dollars. This one's got 150% leverage and scores off the charts in terms of what we get for what we put in. And I just have always thought a general criteria, which would be totally subjective, but sort of the bang for the buck strategy is something I'd like to at least have us discuss when we're coming up with this criteria. Because I think it's important. I mean, I think of what Tom Cole did with Avon Hills in terms of reverse auction to get lower prices for easement. That's a really unique project, and we did it anyhow. But, you know, if Bill scores something a 6 on bang for the buck and I've got it as a 1, the great discussion of what did he see in that project that was really unique that we ought to consider. And it highlights that in my mind and gives us an opportunity to engage in discussion. Because in the end, the evaluation criteria gets us to the point of saying, who do we want to listen to with projects? And so it's really about getting us to that point. It's not about how much money they get at the end of the hearings. It's about getting us to the hearings. And so I think it's okay to be a little subjective. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair, members, if it would be okay, staff could go ahead and gather some basic ideas, information, feedback, and keep that feedback with some partners on an anonymous scale, which I think would be your point, Jim, and bring that to the council for the December meeting. Would that be an appropriate step here? And council members send there, we'll definitely solicit each of you for what comments to bring in and bring together at least as a packet so if there's a committee or other discussion can roll forward from that point.
Okay, we've got two suggestions. One to seek information from our partners and Member Hartwell's thoughts on unique projects. Further thoughts? And at this point, we would have the staff put some suggestions together for the December meeting. There's consensus for that. That's the direction we will move. Thank you. We move to item 6 and the right rider language for MLB 2016. Item A.
Mr. Chair, members, there's no action necessary on this, but we wanted to at least start your minds in this direction because there are potentials for riders on the bill or language to be included in the bill, as you know, we've done it in the past. There are two things that are at least in front of staff at this point we're considering and are aware of the need for consideration. And one is with the Pineland Sands Aquifer Phase 2, which was last year's appropriation, or 2015 appropriation, from ML 2015. That language actually says that the it restricts acquisition of forest lands to Cass County and Medina counties only. DNR has asked that be expanded into Hubbard County because they have some opportunities there for some sensitive properties, some sensitive parcels. So that's one consideration, and something for you to think about. We'll look at what that language should be with Janelle and Greg, and bring that back to you in December, and then that would be the point where we'll get a chance to say, yeah, it's a good idea or it's not. The other thing is with regards to the buffers, Minnesota buffers for wildlife, it's just in looking at the language, it was a bit different than RIM. And for instance, RIM says to acquire permanent easements and restore. But in the Minnesota buffers, it's worded a little differently, which sometimes a little bit of difference means a lot of difference. And it said to acquire permanent conservation easements to protect and enhance. It wasn't. And to protect and enhance or whatever. At any rate, because of the structure of the sentencing, we decided staff we should really look back. And as it says in the memo here, went back through, Joel actually went back through the original audio tapes and found that, yes, indeed, the intent by the council as well as the Minnesota Buffers Project, and when it was presented way back in 2009 and moving forward, was to purchase easements and restore those easements, so make sure it's all done. So in talking with Janelle especially, it was seemed pertinent to, and with Dr. MLB also, it seemed pertinent to maybe make a change in the language retroactively that would make sure everybody understands that it is for purchasing easements and enhancing. That way there's no question about any expenditures going backwards, and then going forward that change of language being brought in as well. So those are the only two items that we're aware of at this point, I believe. But there may be others coming forward, or you may each think of something that we've missed or that is yet to come up and be alerted to. What questions?
Well, I'm not familiar with how all of the, you know, four project plans or accomplishment plans that we're approving right now. Is there rider language that's developed in that, for instance, like issues having to do with trails or things like that? Are they project specific or are those requirements?
Mr. Chair, is okay if we turn that to Greg and Janelle for we'll get the absolute best advice.
I don't think I completely caught what the question is.
I'm just curious about prior language for all of the accomplishment plans that we're looking at right now, and if we develop prior language, if that happens, that we develop it for the bill that we'll be looking at next month, and how that gets brought forward. For instance, I'm just curious about anything having to do with trails. We've talked a lot about trails. And I've heard information about trails. Do we put rider language in it, in December about different projects? Or do we just approve accomplishment plans? And I just don't know.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Julie, you should have, I think that's the plan, is to have a draft bill. It won't be in the revised system yet, but it will be kind of a Word document that we staff of the council produces, that will have the draft of prior language, so you will have a chance to review that, make changes to it, and then you'll vote on that in December, and that would require a 9-vote supermajority for the final package, but that will be the language then that will be put together in bill form to be submitted to the legislature. But if there will be, and those are some of the things for you to be talking about or thinking about, is if there's some general rider language, we have the statutory language, the language that applies to the whole bill, but then there's also for each individual project, many times there's language put in. I think I mentioned that, or somebody mentioned that, the previous one dealing with the land being that would be acquired by Reuter, where in the Senate bill, they did add some language to the Reuter. I assume that the council may want to take a look at whether or not to add that. It had to do with access to forest roads on other lands that be provided. So there will be that chance to do a December meeting to look at that. And I'm not sure when Mark is planning on sending out to draft bill in advance and have a chance to look at it. But those are things that you're going to need to think about and to look at over the next month as to what you want to have provided.
Any other questions or discussion with regard to the writer language or the these projects? All right, so the plan would be that staff will have some language for consideration at the December meeting. Any Hearing nothing further on that item, we will move to item 7. And review and progress the draft accomplishment plans for 2016. Do you want to lead off on the Marsh Lake issue, Executive Director?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you. As you see on your agenda, number 7, we have it broken down into 3 areas. So Marsh Lake is the first one. This was an issue that I think was overlooked definitely was overlooked by staff at the last meeting. And from talking with other council members, I think it was overlooked by council members as well. As you know, or as you're aware at least, the Marsh Lake project had an original funding application for $2 million. At the end of the last meeting, their appropriation from the council, the recommended appropriation level, was $1.691 million. Feedback from Marsh Lake previous to that had been that they really needed full funding for it to be a viable project. And that was the thing we knew as staff, but I neglected to bring it forward. It just unfortunately slipped my mind during the meeting. And as I understand, pretty much everybody else forgot about it too. So I thought that should probably be something that's discussed right away. If the council decides that it should be appropriated in full or recommends full appropriation at $2 million, that's a $309,000 addition to the current level you were recommending. And that would have to come from one of the other projects, potentially one of the other, somewhere else. That's a very good point. Member Kingston says it wouldn't have to. It could come from the reserve. We do have a 5% reserve. And speaking as the conscience, so to speak, my recommendation would be to don't dip into the reserve. And that's what MNB is always advising the council as well. In which case, you would have to. If you weren't going to dip into the reserve, then you would end up looking at reappropriating from one of the other things.
Yeah,
Member Kingston.
Thank you, Chair. I disagree. I think it would be much more kludgy and much more awkward to take it from all the other projects that have already been laid out, unless we're going to start playing with the whole works again. I think 309 out of our reserve is not as big a deal as it might sound. And I think that we still have another budget adjustment before December, don't we? So it might be a non...
Before the December meeting.
Before the December meeting. However, I would not like to act on that until we answer some of the questions that staff brought up on WREO2 regarding the leverage that was mentioned in the original. I want to make sure that leverage is still there. So I guess I'd like to talk about Marsh Lake in total and talk about the questions that staff brought up and then discuss the budget. If we're going to move to increase it to the $2 million even or not, and then where it would come out of. I think it's kind of a staged discussion that we should be having.
Please use the microphone so that it's picked up by the recorder.
Okay, it's on. Chairman Anderson, council members, my name again is Dave Trouba. I'm the regional wildlife manager for the southern region. More importantly, for the past 24 years, I've been the wildlife manager for the Lac Crow Wildlife Management Area, which includes Marsh Lake. So I've been on the Marsh Lake planning team since the beginning, and with that, I'll hand the microphone over to Shaheen.
Hello, Chairman Anderson and council members. I'm Shaheen Khosrowshahi. I'm with the Corps of Engineers. I'm the project manager who has been managing this project through design and hopefully future construction.
And if I understand the question correctly, it would be on the leverage that we're going to use with the state funding. And last time I approached the council, I told the story. We're at the half-yard line with Marsh Lake. And what full funding on the state and the full $2 million does is give us our 35% cost share. And what that's going to allow me to do and other people to do is turn around and go to our federal partners and say, hey, we have full state funding. We need your 65% on the federal end. And we have strong congressional support for Marsh Lake. And I think with that full funding, we're really going to be able to put the full court press on our federal congressional delegation and get that 65% we needed to finally get Marsh Lake done. And Shaheen could talk, you know, being from the Corps and working with them for years, there's no guarantee that we're on the federal end. But when we always dealt with this, it's always that relationship we're building, because there's never been full guarantee on the state end. But having that state money, boy, now we can go and say, hey, let's get it done.
Mr. Chair, I would move Councilmember Kingston's proposal to take it off the bottom line, realizing that in December we're going to get more updated information. And I think it's all pertinent to the conversation that's going to be forthcoming. But Marsh Lake clearly needs all the money, so I would recommend that we take increase the funding to the $2 million and take it off the bottom line for now.
So if I understand your motion, Representative McNamara, it's to fund the additional $309,000, the shortfall that they have for full funding, and that would come from reserves or from possibly additional monies that we could find out with the next report?
Correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay, you've heard the motion. Member Hartwell.
So I'd like to know if you've applied for any other money from any other source, because there are a lot of people out there that didn't get full funding who would argue the same thing that you're arguing. If we don't get all the money, we can't do the work. And they go out and find funding from somewhere else. And I think we need to understand better why you can't find this money anywhere else.
Chairman Anderson, council members, we have a bonding request in right now, and it's still kind of new to me, but the bonding folks, management and budget, are coming to us saying, well, the SARD council has funded you, and so we do have a request in for bonding, but I just last week I reduced it, kind of hedging my bet on full funding from the SARD council. It's just...
So what would you tell us to tell other people who come to us like you and say, give us all the money we want because we need the money to do our project too?
Yeah, so Chairman Anderson, council members, I think what I would tell you is that this has been a 10-year process. We've been working on Marsh Lake for 10 years. We are now at 95% design. Working with the Corps, we have been working... We have tight budget numbers. I'm not coming to the council with estimates. These are pretty hard and fast construction numbers that we need to get Marsh Lake done.
I'm not disputing the numbers. I'm asking the question. And I support your project, so don't get the question wrong. But there are a lot of people in the audience who would like full funding for their projects who didn't get it. Who could argue, as you say, I need all the money to do all the work I'd like to do. It's important work. And we as a council are going to, if we give you this money, trust me, someone else will ask the same question. And so the question becomes, what are we supposed to tell them when they come and say, I really needed all the money to buy that parcel of land. What do you want me to do with the amount that I don't have now to do the work that you said you wanted us to do?
Chairman Anderson, council member, that's a fair question. I guess way I would approach that is on Marsh Lake, we already dropped one project feature from consideration. We got the main project feature still intact. I would argue we can't drop any of those three features. That's putting in the variable crest structure. That's putting in the fish passive structure, which gives us passive water level management. And then the 2-mile reroute on the Palmetier River. All those projects feed on themselves. We dropped a project to draw down a smaller fish pond. We dropped Lewisburg Grade culverts from consideration. So we're coming to the council with a lean package of the main features, and I guess I'm going to stand by that on the priority looking in Shell Lakes and Noah Marsh Lake, and the lake is in decline. Full funding finally gets this project done, which has been going on for, quite frankly, far too long. And if we don't get the full funding, this is going to drag it out. We're going to have to, it's going to drag the project out, and that's going to increase costs in the end. That's how I would approach that question right now. By delaying the project, our construction costs will go up.
Member Blackburn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think our testifier is being polite, saying that it's a fair question. I actually don't think it's a fair question. We're the ones that set the funding limits for folks. We're the ones that decreased funding. I mean, we kind of got to own that part. We could make choice of only funding full funding, you know, five projects. We make those choices. It's not his. And the other thing is that this is an engineered project that they've already, you know, there are some projects that are scalable. And not everybody comes forward with, you know, just this one piece of property and we already know this is the price. Most of the time that's not the case. This is an engineered project. They've already gone, you know, 10 years into this thing. At this point, they just want to build it. And I think it's probably a pretty firm price. You know, I've been involved in building major construction projects. At this point, that, you know, the bullseye gets much more narrow, and I'm sure they've got a pretty exact price advantage.
And Julie, just, I support this, and I'll give them the extra money. I don't have a problem. I'm talking about a precedent that we're setting of having someone come back and say, if you don't give me at all, I'm not going to do the project, which is concerning to me, and I still want to do the project. But I think as a council, we've got to be clear of what we're doing. We have not done this before. Had someone come back and say, if you don't do this, we're not going forward, so you really need to fully fund us. That's different than what we've experienced before. And that's something that I think is important to note and talk about. When the day is done, I'm in support of giving them the extra money. I'm talking about the precedent we're setting of having someone come back and sort of tell us they've got to have full funding or it won't happen. Because we've never experienced that before.
Member Casey.
Well, this isn't news. I mean, we got the information that this was an all or nothing project before we did the allocations. We knew this in the summer. So it's not like they're coming in the back door and giving us a different story than they did right down the line. And when you get all the, when we get our whole roster every year, there are some that are scalable. Most of them are. And every now and then you get some or all or nothing. But I would you know, echo David's concern that should be very clear right from the get-go. There was some discussion after we got these projects, and if you read through them, I figured out in the summer that Marsh Lake was the only 100% project of the whole thing. But then there was a question raised after, well, are there some more of them that are 100%? No, there weren't. So we should make it very clear when we get the application. The project manager should say, this is a project that it needs this amount, and if we don't get all of that, it's not going to happen. So I think going forward, we should be clear in requesting that information from the proposer.
which this one was.
Maybe that goes to a criteria thing that we do in the call to request, but I really do support the project, and I'm going to vote to take out of reserves to do it. I want the discussion of where we are right now to be the point of this, not that we shouldn't do it, because I really believe we should.
Yeah, sorry, I just want to reiterate that I think that when we're doing our allocations that we should know up front, ahead of time, which ones are 100% and which ones aren't. Because it doesn't do much good to say, okay, I'll give 500 to Marsh Lake. It's either zero or the whole shebang.
And it might be helpful just to take your microphones out of the stand and pass them around. I think everyone will be able to hear better and the record will be well established. Further discussion then with regard to the motion to approve $309,000 from reserves for the Marsh Lake project.
Could I ask just one more question that the staff identified? What's the useful life of the drawdown structure?
Chairman Anderson, Council Members, the project right now is designed at feasibility and was determined for a 50-year life cycle. 50. Now, it may very well be operating beyond that, but if we're looking at benefits and operation and maintenance costs for a 50-year cycle.
Well, I'm going to be around to see if that's true.
Right. Further discussion then with regard to the motion or the project? Seeing and hearing no further discussion to be made, we call the question on the motion. All those in favor of approving the $309,000 from reserves for the Marsh Lake project, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion is carried. $309,000 is approved. Thank you. Item B then is to review the draft accomplishment plans. And we have a summary. And Sandy, are you going to lead us on that one?
Before you guys receive binders with draft accomplishment plans, staff.
Can you get it closer? I think it's.
Staff down and reviewed all the accomplishment plans. You guys received the binder last week, I believe. We look at these draft accomplishment plans when we are drafting the appropriations bill. So if you think the project sufficiently describe what they're doing, cooperators' roles, the amount and the purpose of the appropriation, we'll move forward the draft of the bill based on what's in the accomplishment plan.
If I can add one thing that Sandy didn't highlight, and I will because I think it's really important. Sandy came up with another tool for the council this year. And regarding the budget, so in your binders, the very last page has a comparison report on the budget. What it did was it took the budget that was original from the original accomplishment plan and compared it to what the revised budget was after the recommendation for allocation from the council. So you can see how everything stacks up. What the percentage of funding was for the from the council, whether they got 100% or 36%. If you go to each one of the appropriations, so let's say for the very first one, PA01, go to the last page of that, and you'll see the last two pages are actually that budget comparison. On the front side of it is the actual looking at the budget and looking at comparison of the back pages, comparing the outputs.
Mark, Director Johnson, where are you getting that from?
Getting it, actually, that page is in your folders.
It's the last page inside of each tab section.
Oh.
Last page inside of each tab section, yes.
We're doing that over here.
We put out. We wanted to make sure that you had hopefully seen that. At any rate, that's where some of the questions came from staff and how staff put together these other questions that popped up to us. So Sandy and Joe and I each took all the proposals, looked through them over the few days that we had in advance of you all, wrote down our questions, what we had. We combined, came together as a trio to decide, okay, where are questions, the questions that we came up with, are they important enough that they should be forwarded to council or not? And that's where we tried to come up with the questions that are attached to your packet today under 7B. They may or may not be good questions, but except that we were wondering, that's what Sandy just led you through. But I wanted to make sure you also saw from a budget side, it's a new tool for you. Hopefully it's helpful.
I think it might be helpful for us to have maybe have staff, Mark or Sandy or someone to lead us through the notes that they have on each of these and see if there's questions from the council with regard to those. And I'm looking at the summary sheet that was passed out as part of your packet today, because the questions are the notes are there. So I'm not sure, Mark, if you want to lead us or if you want to give Sandy.
I just wanted to point out one more thing that was handed out, that this right here is a summary of the proposals that you have in your books. So if things move forward as they stand, this is kind of the distribution that we will have by activity and by areas of the state.
Mr. Chair, I'll walk through these with you if you'd like, and if it's okay with you, I'd ask for Sandy Joe to chime in if they comments or questions on this? Okay. So in this spreadsheet, if you go to 7B and pull up the first page of the spreadsheet under PA01, which is the DNRWMA and SNA acquisition phase 8, you'll notice under the notes page, or under the notes on the right side, it says DSS not consistent with percentage of funding reduction. That was just, we tried to be extremely fair and across the board as we went through things. The reason that comment is there is the percentage of funding for the request was, as recommended by the council, is 35.64%. There, under the budget, if you look at that, the DSS for that budget is actually the direct services is 51.22%, so 16% above the normal reduced or reducted level. So our question is that appropriate or not? We don't know, but it stands out. So that we should bring that to your discussion and see if you want to bring that up to the members.
Member Hartwell.
Thank you. First of all, the staff, thank you for the analysis. This is great work. I got my book when I got home at 10 o'clock on Sunday night, and I will tell you I have not had a chance to peruse the entire book since then, so to have your analysis is incredibly helpful. And you work with this every day. We work with this not as often. So I know there's been reluctance to do this in the past, but this is really great work. I would think that whether we hear it today from folks in the audience or in writing subsequent to that, we should get answers to all of the questions that were asked in this staff analysis, because I think it's important stuff. And I don't know what the best way to do it is, if we want to hear from everybody that's here or if we want to ask the written comments on it to answer those questions. But one way or another, I think it's really important that we listen to the answers before we make any final decisions.
What would be easiest for staff to have the this is on our website presently.
We'd be happy to send out an email to project managers and put together some sort of matrix that we can get you at the December meeting for the answers. I guess the important thing might be to consider anything in your stands out as being needing to be changed or clarified prior to the bill draft.
I think it all needs to be clarified prior to the bill draft, because if the answer comes back as unsatisfactory as to why, and I don't mean to pick on it, but it's first on the list, why the DSS isn't consistent, and there's an objection to that, you probably want to resolve that before we get to drafting the bill. Otherwise, you're going to be redrafting the bill for the January meeting, which would probably not be ideal. So somehow we've got to get to the bottom of this and be satisfied with the answers sooner rather than later.
Member Kingston.
Thank you. I guess I don't understand the percentage, what it represents in the staff report, 51.22%. I looked at DSS in the original request. It was 4% of the total. In the adjusted accomplishment plan, it's 6% of the total. So I guess, did it go up 50% as a percentage of it? I'm more interested in seeing how much of the project the DSS is. It went from 4% to 6%. That's not a huge hike. And there may be economy and scale. I'm not going to answer the question for DNR, but it's not a 51% increase per se. I guess I just am not quite sure of what it means.
Mr. Chair and members, just to reiterate, staff is not saying necessarily these are huge concerns. It was questions that came up in our mind, and we thought we needed to forward them so the council was at least aware of the question. Whether it is a problem or not is not for the staff to decide, it's for the council. I should mention also along with that some of these you'll see are definitely not questions but praises, such as under one of them, WA01, it says leverage stated 100% exclamation point. That's a praise because in often cases when the amount of recommendation was reduced, the leverage also reduced.
The way that I look at it is the way that the original proposal comes in. At the bottom of the budget sheet on the original proposal, it shows what the percentages are and what the leverages are, and I'm interested in what percent of what the project now is. You know, leverage stated 100%, it's not 100% match. I'm not understanding what it's referring to. You could say DSS is at the same ratio. It's the same ratio, or not.
Member Kingston, we could. This is just the way we did it this time, as I mentioned, it's the first time. So.
Yep.
Member Wilkins.
Thank you. It's, I think, important to note that there are some spots where there are no notes, which means then that if those particular programs, everything was proportionately reduced, that's what I take it as, if there were no questions, then it really, in all fairness, should apply to all of the other projects. Because if some of the project managers said, well, gee, you know, they reduced, we need to reduce that percentage in every category of our budget, then to the benefit of those and to say thank you, I think it requires us to say, all right, the rest of you, please explain why you didn't reduce to the same by that percentage. So that would be my main concern. The other thing was that there are a couple questions here that we have batted around a lot that I'm not sure that staff can take care of, and one of them is the roads and trails question not answered. That kind of a thing. I think we're still looking at that trail issue and the access road issue, and I think probably staff needs some direction as they start putting a bill together. If there's going to be writers or something else, they need to be able to address that in their bill. So maybe that's a particular topic that we should pull out of this and say, let's not have the project managers answer these questions because they're not being answered and we need to get an answer.
If it would be helpful to the council and the staff, we could have the project managers that are here respond to the, these notes. And I think we've got the time here unless I hear something else.
Thank you. Yeah, I think the questions all need to be answered. I don't think it's going to be real helpful to not get the answers until our next meeting. We should really get them now. This is what we're trying to move forward with. But if the managers weren't given the information or the questions until yesterday or today, that's really not, you know, adequate preparation time for them either.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious. I see there's a suggested motion at the bottom of this item 8B, motion to direct staff to proceed with the bill draft based on draft accomplishment plans as discussed and directed today. Mr. Chair, if that motion doesn't have 9 votes, doesn't that mean that we got to come back at our next meeting and revisit this issue? I'm just curious. I think this might be premature if we don't have 9 votes. Mr. Chair, it doesn't need a supermajority for the motion, but we should be realistic. The motion is to pass a bill, to approve drafting a bill. If that bill doesn't have 9 votes, maybe we're getting premature in our discussion. We're getting hung up around a single tree when I think we should look at the whole force.
Yeah, I think certainly there's that question, and I thought we would probably... maybe after getting some of these answered, going through these, get to that issue, or I guess I'm not certainly understand your point. Stop discussion with regard to this now, or?
Mr. Chair, I think myself, I don't know that we need a race to get the bill drafted. We've got a number of meetings between now and March 8th. I know there's direction that we're supposed to make a recommendation. But I think we should also face the fact I think there's strong probability that the bill, the way we pass the bill or suggested the bill at our last meeting, I think there's a strong probability it could not have 9 votes. And it need 9 votes, and I'm wondering if we shouldn't work more on crafting a bill that gets 9 votes. Yeah. And if this has 9 votes, we can move forward. It's never moved forward before with less than 11 votes, and I'm wondering if we're going to move to the legislature with the bill if it does only have 9 or 10 or
Well, Representative McNamara, I have had calls from a number of members, and I do not believe that we would have the necessary votes to progress the plan today to draft a bill.
So, Mr. Chair, I think that the great work of Ms. Smith and others on preparation and the questions raised, I think specifically, like not to pick on the first one because it's BA01, I think it would be nice if those people would get back to staff before our next meeting with those overhead questions, for instance. That would be helpful. I think rather than make ones that drove out here and come forward and testify about what they can live with or not, I think if staff could work with them to find out where those questions are. But I think, Mr. Chair, we may want to have a discussion. Do we want to wait until the December meeting? Hopefully all 12 of us would be there then and find out if we do have 9 of the 12 willing to vote for the proposal. Then is the point if we have 9. And I agree with you. I don't know that we have 9 votes to pass it. Maybe we should be discussing what can we do to get a consensus. We all like we have in the past.
I thought we had to have bill language into the legislature statutorily by the middle of January. We can't wait until March. We have to have it done by the middle of January, which means we have to do it in December.
Mr. Chair and members, I think it says something along the lines of a recommendation to the legislature, because it actually is. And we can draft a bill that doesn't spend all the money. If we have to pull some projects out and get something with 90 votes, we can do that. I think we have to face the reality. I don't think the bill that we voted on at our last meeting has 9 votes. So rather than do nothing, we have to pass a smaller bill that has 9 votes or whatever we need to do to get 9 votes. But it is by January sometimes, it's not now.
Yeah, by January, like I said.
Representative Member Kingston.
Well, I don't know about what other off-the-record discussions have been going on, because I don't know about who is voting for what until we come to this meeting. And if there is a bunch of pushback on what we decided on our last meeting, then that's what people should be talking about today. What do you like or what don't you like, or why don't you want to do it? Otherwise, we should have talked about it last meeting.
Well, certainly some of these questions could become part of the discussion, but there's...
I don't think it's substantial.
There
could
be.
What's wrong with the package? Let's talk about it. Let's get it on the table and get down to business.
Well, what I have heard is with regard to the white earth issue, and that is certainly one of those that is out there.
Well, then somebody talk about it who doesn't like it. Again. What's changed between now and the last meeting?
Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure it had 9 votes at the last meeting.
Yeah, we didn't take and count. There was no roll call vote.
Yes, there was. Yeah. Minutes. There was a roll call vote on the White Earth Nation project.
With regard to the whole package, to the whole accomplishment plans, there was not. It was just a voice vote.
I asked for a roll call.
Mr. Chair, there was a roll call on Member Olson's motion for the later proposal to add it. It was not a roll call when we made the pause. Mr. Chair, I think you asked for a vote on it, and there was definitely oral dissent. I know I personally said no on it, and I heard other voices.
Likewise. Member Wilkins.
I'm not going to speak out against the White Earth Nation. I am going to speak out for being honest and open. And I hear far too much talk about what people hear or what people want or who heard what from whom. And I don't think that's the issue. The issue is deep down, how we feel about this particular project or any particular project as related to the criteria in the constitutional amendment. And I am very comfortable with the White Earth Nation meeting all the requirements of the constitutional amendment. And I'm very comfortable with it meeting really the greatest amount of criteria that we have in our present call. I just don't see the reasoning behind not approving it. What I see the council doing is not being able to do a package at all. Because if you have two or three people that feel real strongly about that, they're not going to approve a package with it removed. You're not going to have a package. Period. You can wait till December, you can wait till January, you can wait till February. You're not going to have a recommendation unless you pull that project. You pull that project, then you have three or four people that believe strongly that that project should be in there, and that doing less than that would be maybe not following our conscience. And you won't have a package because you're going to have them not approving the package when you pull that White Earth Nation out of it. So you really are at a point in time where you're going to have some statesmen around. By statesmen, I mean not politicians. I mean statesmen. I mean people that can pull everyone together and say, okay, we can't all agree, but we need to come to some conclusions. We need to keep the goals in mind, and maybe we don't like it. Maybe we personally don't like this little thing or that little thing. But let's face it, this is a recommendation. The legislature can and will do what they think is best. And maybe they'll pull the White Earth Nation. But that is not our decision. Our decision is really, is it a good project? Does it meet the criteria? Does it follow the constitutional amendment? Can we, in good conscience, recommend to move it forward and let the legislature do their job? Let them do their job. They are responsible to the entire state of Minnesota. So I, for one, personally, could not remove this project and say I can vote for the rest of the package.
Other points? Discussion? Member Olson.
I think Betty said it very well, and I think everybody here knows what I'll say. And I said it last year, Bob, when you tried personally to pull that project at the very last vote, and I looked at you and I said, there's nine people in this room today, and if you try to pull that PAP project, then I'm going to vote no, and I'm going to tank that bill, and I'm going to do my damnedest to do that to you again. This is racial discrimination, and don't you dare tell me that it's not. This pisses me off, and it should piss off everybody here. That you're going to play these games and try to pretend that it's not? I'm embarrassed to be on this council with people like you leading it. And you should be ashamed of yourself for trying to do it.
Thank you for the personal attack.
You bet.
I think we can have discussion with regard to issues and projects and not get personal, but choose as you may. Member Harper.
So I know there are people who are not supportive of the White Earth project. I happen to be a supporter of it and think it's a good project. You all know that I think we're making a huge mistake on food plots. You think we're making a mistake on off-road vehicle restrictions. I believe we're making mistakes in doing that. But I also believe that it's not me that's important, it's the package that's important. It's not my beliefs
that are important. I need to express it. I need to get it on the table for discussion. And then we need to find consensus and move forward. And when there is a part of the bill that isn't perfect, in my opinion, it doesn't mean I'm trying to undo the bill. It means that's not something that I think is the best for us. But we have to come together as a group and find solutions that are vastly, that the vast majority of it works for the state. And we need to get over, I don't like this, so therefore I won't support the whole thing. It's just not the way we ought to do business. We ought to be trying to find consensus and making compromise when it isn't perfect in our opinion, but the majority of it is pretty damn good. And we've got a great package here. And we got some questions to be answered. Thank you, staff, for making it easy for us to see those questions. We want to get it right. Those questions need to be answered so we get it as good as possible. And then we need to come together as a group. And we need to support the entire package, even though there's a piece of it that isn't exactly the way we want it. Because I know everybody here is going to have a piece of this package that isn't exactly the way they want it. And, you know, I'm going to continue to bring up food plots. But I'm going to support the package with the thing in it of food plots that I don't support. Because that's the right thing to do. So I think we need to get over this, I don't like a particular thing or a particular project. We need to voice it. We need to get it on the table because that's the right thing to do. And then we need to come together as a group and support it even though it isn't perfect.
Member Kingston.
Thank you, Bob. I'm more of a mind to go that way, and what Betty said. But my main objection is that we've worked through this process, you know, year after year. We've worked through it again this year, and we came out of the last meeting with a consensus on all of this stuff, and we have all these accomplishment plans based on the work that was done in the council up through the last one. And I don't envy the legislators' jobs. I mean, you're the ones that are going to vote on its ultimate destiny. But our job is so simple. That's some of the beauty of it. We're supposed to be picking the best projects to protect fish, game, and wildlife in forests, prairies, and wetlands in the state. And we've done that. That's our job. We don't have to play all these other games that the legislators have to play. I'm not smart enough to do that. I don't want to. They have to take it to the next step. They have to carry the ball. And once we've done our job in good conscience to pick the projects through our criteria, which we already did, let's move ahead. And I'd like to make the motion to direct staff to proceed with our package as we have it. And we'll get the answers from the project managers. If there's anything substantial to move us off the mark at the next meeting, we can do that. But I don't expect that it will. So I'm calling for the motion.
Member Kingston's motion is to have staff draft the bill for recommendation by the council at the December meeting. As
proposed on the draft accomplishment plans that we have in place.
Based on the draft accomplishment plans that we have before us today. Discussion. Member Tilley.
Mr. Chair, the staff has identified areas that we are asking questions about. How do we incorporate those answers? Or that just, does the staff incorporate what they find and highlight that so we know what the result of the inquiries with the proposers are?
I think Joe might have an answer to that. How would we go forward?
Mr. Chair, members, I think there's two different things that we're trying to get. Some are administrative, like, you know, questions weren't answered.
Right.
And we need to have those questions answered. And then they're more substantial issues, and that might be related to just go down the list where, you know, you guys could actually say, you know, we don't agree with your reasoning behind doing or allocating funds that way, and that might affect either your opinion of funding it at a certain level or the way that the project manager budgeted. And so that would have an effect, or have a substantial effect on our bill. So I think there's two things, and I wouldn't be comfortable having the staff make those decisions without, I mean, those are council decisions. So I think administratively, like making sure that questions are answered, whether, you know, that's, it's not up to us whether those answers are right or wrong, that's a council decision.
Executive Director Johnson.
Yeah, if I might add, just from a standpoint of the mechanics of drafting, as this goes forward, it's looking at the appropriation language, and Greg and Janelle, please feel free to correct me or add to this. So numbers can be changed, even if we come, they often are, if we come back with a draft bill or draft language bill. If there are other caveats that the council wants placed in the appropriation language saying no trails upon this or whatever it might be, just pulled that one out of the air, then that could be added. But at least it gives you a chance to see what the draft would be like. And so from a mechanic standpoint, I think we could move forward, the staff could move forward with this motion. But maybe Greg or Janelle have other input.
Okay, Member Hartwell first.
Yeah, I just want to remind us that these are draft accomplishment plans. We don't actually approve the accomplishment plans until the bill is actually approved by the legislature and signed by the governor. And unless we agree to the accomplishment plan next June, they don't get to spend the money. So if there's too much in administrative costs in this and we never come to an agreement, there can be an appropriation and it never gets spent. So the language in the bill, you know, has a broad spend this much money for this project that does these things. It doesn't get into the fine detail of how much gets into this category, and we can still negotiate that out with the project manager next June, July, August, and move forward at this time without any problem. There may be a few little things in here that are deal killers that we ought to flush out in December, but they would be a minor number of things that would have to then be resolved between December and January when our final bill is approved. So the work that we would need to do if there was some big problem between December and January in terms of revision to language is really the risk of us having a huge problem is really, really minor. Greg, you're nodding. Am I correct on that?
Well, Mr. Chairman, David, in part, yes. You're talking about two different things. I think Joe talked about that, too. I mean, you know, some of the things in here are going to be accomplished by, when you're talking about direct services, things like that. I mean, those are the things that we don't put that in the law anyways. I mean, we put a dollar amount in, and then you work that out through the accomplishment plan. So you're exactly right on those. But there may be other things, because the accomplishment plans also inform us a little bit on how to put together the riders for what they're going to do. So there may be instances that, and I haven't gone through the entire list. I just saw this today. But I don't, and Joe and Mark would know, and Sandy would know better than I. There may be things in here that need to be addressed before you put together the rider. So there may be some things in there. I just don't. I haven't been very careful.
But there's going to be a small,
adjustment. It could be adjusted later, or it could be going into the to the bill. You know, again, numbers can be changed, language can be changed. You know, but sometimes language on the fly is difficult for the December meeting if you're trying to do it. But, you know, there's just some issues like that to consider. But I know, as Joe mentioned, there are some. There may be some things in here that staff don't want to have to put into the language. But again, the things that are just in the accomplishment plan that don't show up in the rider, you're exactly right. You know, that's June and next year before you have to really deal with it.
That's the majority of the issues that are identified.
Member Kingston, then Representative McNamara.
Thank you. Could we get
whatever project managers are here today that could be available to testify and answer any questions, to check some of these off at least today, make this meeting a little bit worthwhile, to get some substantive answers on some of the questions that have been raised. Are there anybody, are you ready to make any, give us some input and cross some of these things off our checklist?
We can go back to Representative McNamara first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to clarify a couple of things based on some of the statements today here. I've got apprehensions about three significant size projects, and not because I actually like all three projects, but think I question the owner of the project or the proposer and who's actually going to do it. And I just want to make clear that it's, my discussion is not about one specific project. So I have three projects. The Mississippi Headwater Board is HA03, Minnesota Deer Hunters proposal, I can't remember the number, and then the Lighter proposal. All three projects I support, but all three projects I don't believe the proposed owner of the project is the right owner. I think there could be a different owner that could work to partner with these groups that would be better to meet the state interest. We've had some bad experience when it's not the state of Minnesota or the federal government owning the projects, and I think it's consistent that we consider all three of those projects. We have different owners. So it's not the project, Mr. Chair. I actually support all three projects and work real hard to have all three projects included. I think all three are actual acquisitions, but I do not support the current owner. I just wanted that to be on the record.
We have the motion before us. Member Taylor.
Mr. Chairman, it has occurred to me that we are asking a lot of these proposers to come back and clarify situations or make adjustments of resolving the issues that are raised around the table as we've done our discussions. Does it make any sense to go to the White Earth Nation and have them address some of the issues that have come up in our discussions? I think Council Member Shara, who wasn't here today, had some questions about the length of the game seasons and that sort of thing. You know, I know game managers set season lengths and limits based on how many animals they expect to be harvested by how many participants and that sort of thing. And if the this piece of property at White Earth is going to be open to public hunting, that will change dramatically the number of hunters, and perhaps the band has ideas of how they adjust the seasons, both the limits and the length of the seasons to do that. Should we be approaching not only this writer but some of the others to see if there's any proposed changes to how they laid out their proposals and how they anticipate reflecting the observations made by this group?
Well, the motion before us is to have the staff draft the bill. I'm not sure that going into individual projects at this time is in keeping with the motion that we have before us. And so, if you want to withdraw, that's certainly up to you. Otherwise, we can take a vote on it and okay. Is there a request for a roll call vote?
Sure.
Is there a request for a roll call vote?
Yes, please.
Okay. Request for a roll call vote on the motion to have the staff draft the bill for recommendation by the council at the December meeting.
Chair Anderson.
No.
Ms. Blackburn.
No.
Mr. Harwell.
Yes.
Senator Engelbertson.
No.
Ms. Kingston.
Yes.
Representative Lilly.
Yes.
Representative McNamara.
No.
Ms. Olson.
Yes.
Mr. Tilley.
Yes.
Ms. Wilkins.
Yes.
That's 6 for yes, 4 for no.
Sufficient numbers then to move forward with the drafting of the bill.
Yes, there is.
A majority vote on this, yes, but there isn't.
The recommendation of the legislature is a different bill that happens in a different vote that happens in December.
There being 6-4 and 4 against the motion that's carried.
Mr. Chairman, it occurs to me as well that once we have some language to work with, not only us but the proposers will have opportunity to deal with proposals for changes to the language too. So it's just drafting the bill is just a starting place. That just is not going to be cast in concrete.
Member Gibson.
I have a question for the three candidates that you have an issue with, Denny. How do we as a council assign a project to someone who never applied to it? It's a technical matter. Either you're going to vote for it as presented or you're going to take them out. But we already voted to put them in last month. How do you assign a project to someone that didn't ask for it?
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Member Kingston, I think we could ask, it prevails, so they're going to draft it the way it is, but I think it would be, it hopefully is a good message to the proposers to know that they need to maybe go work with somebody and see if there's somebody they can partner with that will be able to make the project acceptable. I think there's a number of questions in the case of the Headwater Board and the deer hunters of their capability to handle the project and the implications, and there may be different owners. The lighter potential solution would be, as I've said before, it's got a WMA on three sides. It was DNR owned. It's a WMA. And just to clarify, I think there's been some misconception, and we could have DNR come at our next meeting, but whether the White Earth owns the project or DNR owns the project, and White Earth is here, they can correct me if I'm wrong, the White Earth Nation gets to hunt under their seasons, whether it's a WMA or whether it's tribal owned land. Their seasons are different on the reservation than for the other people, and that'll be the same. I think there's been some. I myself was confused until a few years ago. It doesn't matter who owns the land. If it's within the territory, they get to hunt under their rules. Right. If somebody's saying, well, I want it because of WMA, then they won't be able to hunt longer. That's not true, but the White Earth can correct me if I'm wrong. But that's not the case. They get to hunt whether no matter who owns it. In the case of deer hunters, the potential would be an NGO or the state of Minnesota potentially owning the land. The deer hunters would be a great one to add to figuring out that property, Mr. Chair, on what properties to protect and what are the best. But I think they might not be the best one to own it specifically because they testified that they potentially could invoke their nonprofit status. And that's probably as a legislator for that to be known.
Member Hartwell.
I think as we head towards December, it would be wise for us to have the discussion today to hear from those who can't support the bill, who didn't want to go forward. So I assume that means there are issues with the bill, what their issues are, so we have them on the table and can talk about it, instead of putting it off for a month and then having that discussion.
Member Blackburn.
Just to be fair, it wasn't that I was voting against the package. I was voting against the staff potentially wasting time drafting a bill that might not go anywhere. So that was just to explain.
That's why I wanted, that's what I was asking for.
But also, just for the record, you know, I did bring up questions at our last meeting at the very end. I didn't quite think we were done with our meeting. And I had questions about the Deer Hunters and the Mississippi Headwaters Board about being really kind of new to the game and the amount of funds that we're putting there. And I asked questions about ownership, and I asked questions about the program, particularly with the Deer Hunters, of how that would all work. So, and we talked after, and there were certainly concerns about, about that program going forward, and, you know, needing to get guidance from others in order to have that work. So it's not new.
Member Harkle?
A question on the Deer Hunters. You know, they asked for a whole lot of money, and we didn't give them a whole lot of money. And they indicated there were some counties in which they wouldn't be the ultimate holder of the land, and other counties in which they would be the ultimate owner of the land. And as I said, I got this book, you know, Sunday night when I got back from Denver, and I have not had a chance to peruse it. The question I have concerning that is, does the revised accomplishment plan perhaps only have the land included that they wouldn't own in the counties that would hold it directly? Or are they still intending to split it into the various counties and their own ownership as a way of addressing the issue that you've raised?
Well, I know that we did have testimony from the Deer Hunters at the last meeting also, and they expressed somewhat of what you said, Member Hartwell. I don't know if someone from the Deer Hunters wanted to testify today.
Chair, council members, thank you for having me here. For those of you that don't know me, I'm Kim Nelson. I'm operations manager for the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association. Craig Engwall could not be here today. He's at the governor's deer hunting opener, so I will try and answer the questions. Could I ask you to restate your question for me?
Sure. Your original proposal had lands that were going to be bought, some of which would be ultimately held by counties, and some would be held by the deer hunters. We did not allocate all of the money that you asked for, which means you can't buy all the land you'd like to. But the fact that you have an accomplishment plan, it means that you intend to go forward with less money and do less land. Is the land that you intend to purchase land that would end up in county ownership, or would end up in county ownership and the deer hunters' ownership?
I can't accurately answer that question at this time. What I can say is that, as you've seen from the accomplishment plan, all of the parcels were retained within that to allow the most flexibility that we could have in pursuing the projects and in detailing what parcels are the best benefit for the project. I know that doesn't answer your question, but knowing that.
So let me follow up and ask a more direct question, because we heard some sort of, Craig, when he made the presentation, said, you know, being the owner isn't our first choice, it is the choice that we do because we believe in the project. You've heard some resistance to that. So you've expressed a little resistance, you as an organization, and we've got some concerns. And I think the question that would be good to get an answer from you going into our next meeting is, what would you think of restricting the project to only lands that would be held by counties versus held by the Deer Hunters Association, and is that acceptable to you?
I cannot answer that today. Obviously, with the executive board and committee being the overseers of the organization, I can say that we're willing to work with the council to any capacity we can to make sure that the project proceeds.
So, I'm not proposing it. I'm asking the question, and you maybe can take it back.
I will definitely take that one back to the executive board,
so as
executive director.
Executive Director Johnson.
Mr. Chair and Member Hurtwell, I know that one of the partners listed in the accomplishment plan is the Conservation Fund. And I believe Steve Hobbs is here, and I don't know if Steve would have a comment to add to that as well.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members. Again, Steve Hobbs, the Conservation Fund. I certainly don't want to speak on behalf of the Deer Hunters Association. I like those guys. So what I can say is certainly Craig and I have talked about this, and I think the idea is to target the ultimate ownership to counties that are amenable and capable of having that kind of ownership for these lands. We still, I think, want to leave the door open for potentially some of the lands to be potentially owned and managed by the Deer Hunters Association. And that's actually where the Conservation Fund also can help assist them. We own and manage about 400,000 acres nationally in forest lands, and we're very actively assisting them and helping them put their management plans together. But I think just suffice it to say that definitely the vast majority of land that we'd be looking at would ultimately be in county ownership. But that's what we still need to figure out.
Yeah.
Further questions for Steve or Kim? Thank you both. Is anyone here from Mississippi Headwaters? Please.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. I just noticed some themes as you were talking about, as I have eight county commissioners that represent eight different counties for my board that understand structure and the politics involved with many things. I saw three things that you were discussing: capacity, ownership, and trails. I think if we can at least get you into, when we first present, we present at this level. Now you're kind of bringing it down to this level, and I think there just needs to be some clarification. So I'd be happy to provide that.
For the record, would you state your name, please?
Yes, thank you. This is Tim Terrell, Executive Director of the Mississippi Headwaters Board. Capacity-wise, me as an individual, with the flood of 2007 that happened in southeast Minnesota, our organization that I was previously working for received $4.1 million to administrate over a period of 2-3 years. So I think from a capacity standpoint, I worked with the federal government, I worked with the state, DEED, I think is what they're called, Department of a lot of people that I've never worked with before. So I do have that skill and that ability to do that. So the Mississippi Headwaters Board, from a structural standpoint and leadership standpoint and managerial standpoint, has that capacity to take this on. The other one is, you talked a little bit about ownership. We spent a whole year with three of my county commissioners discussing what are the values and what do we want to place into this grant application. And one of the things is, well, the reason we got a supermajority of all the counties signing on with resolutions of support was because we had a there was understanding that local control and local decision making would be a part of this process. When it came down to the details of ownership, there would be two potential owners. In the best case scenario, there would be either the Department of Natural Resources, or there would be the counties actually individually owning them themselves. Unlike the deer hunters, if you look at our budget, there's very few dollars allocated to the counties. We really didn't, with my county commissioners there, they didn't really see, from that standpoint, counties owning a lot of land. There might be opportunity because land is individual and it's decided upon. But we see a majority of that funding going through DNR and using the Department of Natural Resources process. And you had anything to comment there?
Yes, I'm Bob McGillivray with the Trust for Public Land. I just want to put a point on that. As you will see in the accomplishment plan, there is only $150,000 for lands that would be owned by counties. The rest of it all goes to the DNR. And, of course, we will be looking for the most appropriate steward to manage these properties and own it. But it's a very small minority, only $150,000 that would be going for lands that would be owned by counties. And it's certainly possible that there wouldn't be any owned by counties, depending on how these various potential projects, acquisitions progress.
And then to address your last question that it recently came up about trails, I discussed it with our partners of the parcels that were on here, and I said, how many of these do have trails on them? And they said, none that we've observed. So this is kind of indicative of 400 miles is a lot of room, and you can see through the numbers that not every parcel on the Mississippi in this area really does have trails on it. I don't want to skew the point that one project doesn't represent 400 miles, so it's an opportunity to give us all perspective on what this is all about. So. Any other questions?
Questions for Mr. Drell or Mr. McGilvray? Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you. Third one is the waiter. Does anyone hear from waiter?
Good afternoon. I'm Chris Knopp with the Indian Land Tenure Foundation.
Thank you. Ben. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and council members. Maria Volk from the Florida Natural Resources Department.
So we'd be happy to answer any questions. I want to confirm what Representative McNamara said, that if the property were sold today to White Earth Nation, the handout that I handed out in September that showed the hunting and fishing regulations, that's what would apply to tribal members and non-tribal members. If the property were sold today to DNR, that same structure would be in place. So there would be no difference in either situation. So this is a shared system of hunting and fishing regulations in the state, and this property reflects that. And I've, I won't speak for them, but I've confirmed that with Greg Knopf, we spoke about this issue and confirmed that as well on this. So the hunting and fishing structure is the same, and it deals with treaties and our constitutional structure, and that's not going to say change because of this. And one of the exciting things about having White Earth Nation involved in this is that they're going to bring their resources to bear to help manage this project. And it's a way of complementing the state's work. And so this is as part of a shared resource. We're having shared resources, financial resources, that White Earth Nation is bringing to bear here. So that's one of the advantages of not having just a one owner. The state is the owner of these conservation properties.
Questions for White Earth? I guess the question I would have is can the band waive those regulations with regard to having different hunting regulations for different groups?
You know, Mr. Anderson, I've spoken to both staff at White Earth Nation and staff at DNR about that. So there's really sort of three forks in the road. One is the status quo. The other is that White Earth Nation would change its regulations to conform to the state. The other is that the state would conform its regulations on these properties to White Earth Nation's regulations for these properties. And from a management perspective, that presents difficulties. For DNR would not want to change the regulations to have its bag limits conform to White Earth Nation's, because then you'd have an enforcement issue, because you'd have hunters out there that could take on this property but couldn't take on other property. You had that similar problem with White Earth Nation, where you have a bag limit that's more expansive on other properties but not on this one. So it's a practical enforcement matter. It doesn't make sense to change it for these properties. So the shared system is in place throughout the state here, and that makes the most sense from a practical perspective.
I can certainly understand that, but I guess what it comes down to me, and it certainly is not racial, because I have good friends in the Native communities and work with them on other issues, but it's discriminatory to one group to have a different regulation than it is for another group. And if that was to apply in reverse to the Native community, that they could not hunt and that someone else could, another group could hunt for additional time on those lands, I would speak out against that also. I mean, this is money's coming from all the citizens of Minnesota. It just seems to me that there ought to be a uniform application of regulation for everyone, and not have discrimination against any one group.
Sure. Mr. Anderson, I can appreciate that perspective. One of the issues is really the starting point of this, and the starting point is that White Earth Nation and the other bands have retained rights. So the starting point is they had all the rights to the property, the hunting, fishing, possession, ownership, all of it. And those rights were you know, in treaties given away, right? But some of those rights were retained by White Earth Nation, and that's what we're seeing here. And that's the right to regulate hunting and fishing regulations on tribally owned lands here. And so that's really the point. It's not like there's special rights being given to White Earth Nation. What you have are retained rights. And that's reflected in the treaties and the U.S. Constitution. So what you're really seeing here is that system in place here.
Well, I think that's good. However, we're asking the citizens of Minnesota to purchase land and turn it over, and now we're going to take and apply those regulations. I think that if you're going to ask for that, I think there ought to be the same regulations applied to everyone on those kind of lands. Now, I understand that makes it very difficult for everyone to adhere to, but...
You know, I'll respond to that in a moment. I have Mr. Hartwell and Ms. Kingston that have some comments.
Member Hartwell first.
So, Bob, if you follow that logic, we should do no projects with the DNR in any part of the state is covered by tribal rights, because any project that we do is subject to the same bifurcated hunting and fishing seasons that are going to be on this property. It does not matter if it is in DNR ownership or tribal ownership. If it's open to hunting and fishing, this is the way it's going to be on any projects in northern Minnesota, basically. So we should do no projects in northern Minnesota if we're following your logic, because every place we do a project, that it becomes public land and open to hunting and fishing, these dual sets of hunting regulations are in effect.
Member Kingston.
Thank you. The other thing that I want to it's a technical... a technicality, but I think you have to be careful when you start talking about discrimination, because under the law it's very carefully crafted as to what that means. And you can talk about discrimination in the abstract, but in discrimination in the legal sense, that's
against hunters, it doesn't exist, so hunting rights aren't protected other than by the state.
Thank you. Further questions?
You know, a final comment, Mr. Anderson, on this is what this project does is opens up land that's closed to everyone. So right now, it's not open to tribal members, non-tribal members. You know, it's not open to public hunting. And so this has that public benefit of opening it to all Minnesotans under the existing hunting and fishing regulations. So this is a project that expands hunting and expands access where we don't have that now.
Yeah, I understand that the Potlatch lands presently under the REIT does not allow for any hunting on that land. Further comments or questions? Senator,
thank you. So, in so many words, you've said today that the tribal folks are going to be good players in the game. They're going to cooperate back and forth. But the bottom line is that if they have ownership, they don't have to. Is that fair? Either yes or no.
Okay.
I mean, if they decide that they're not going to allow hunting on the ownership of their property, they can say no.
What would happen in that case, they certainly could do that, but then they would lose the land. Under the grant agreement, as I presented in September, I highlighted two parts of that grant agreement. One was the sort of notice of restrictions under which the what we're talking about here, the accomplishment plan language here, where we say we'll allow public hunting to Native and non-Native members. That would be on the chain of title, and so that would be on public notice. And then there's the other provision of the grant agreement where the land would revert to the state. So White Earth Nation could do that, you know. All the Cass County could do that, Crow Wing County, all those counties could do that, but under the provisions of the grant agreement, the reversionary clauses would kick in and they would lose that land. And so there's a real incentive, obviously, to comply with the grant terms so that the land remains in the ownership structure there.
Okay, so my other question would be, as always, and it's not illegal anywhere in the state of Minnesota, is the gray wolf hunt. I mean, that's always a... not always, but has been most recently a contentious issue. If they were to be taken off the endangered species list, there would be no hunting there if there were White Earth ownership. Is that correct? If that were to happen, and I don't know that I like, none of us can even guess if that's going to be taken off the list.
Sure. I mean, speculating that, let's say it is delisted, there is a law in place that White Earth Nation has for no wolf hunting, so there would be no wolf hunting on that property. And we stated that in the grant application before, and that was the case with Fond du Lac as well.
Yeah, Member Blackburn.
I don't necessarily think that this is a question for our testifiers. It's more just a kind of a series of thoughts I have about really this whole situation and trying to figure out, you know, best case scenarios, best outcomes, looking at history of performance of what happened last year and whether we do the same thing again and whether the same thing happens again. Trying to figure out what's most important, and I certainly don't have an answer. And many of you were involved in this last year and know much more about this than I do. You just do. So I have just not the depth of knowledge that you have. And I don't understand all the issues regarding filter and ownership and all that kind of stuff. My questions are really much more simple than that, which is, if we do the same thing this year and it's in the package as it is right now, will it get taken out again? And then my second question that I ask myself after that is, what is the most important thing? Is it that piece of habitat, or is it who owns it? Because there have been other solutions that have been brought forward, and I know that there's issues about, you know, people have you know, accusations and think things about what people's motives are. But I feel like my job is to think about the habitat. And if we do the same thing that we did last year and it gets pulled, we still aren't going to have habitat there. Or it's going to be at risk. And I just, I don't want to really be thinking about any of the accusations in the past kind of experiences that have gone on. All I'm trying to weigh out is, if we do the same thing again and it gets pulled again, that property is at risk again. And I just don't know what is the best way to proceed on
that. Go buy it.
What?
Go buy it.
Well, if I had the means, I'm not. But do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If the piece of property was high value enough for us to be here and select it twice, it's clearly an important piece of property for habitat. And it's important that it gets protected. If in the end of the game, the way that we're proceeding, it gets pulled again, we've not done our job on protecting habitat. We might be maybe more interested in positions and personalities or the past or whatever it might be. But it seems like we need to choose what's the most important thing, habitat or ownership.
Well, I might take a shot at answering that. First of all, I'm not sure that the habitat is fully at risk. I think that the owner of it right now has been managing it for decades. And I think it's still good habitat. They may have harvested timber there, but I'm sure that they've done that in a very compliant way to make sure that the habitat is going to be there for animals and birds and so forth. The other item that might come into play there is if the same thing happens again this year, probably one of the things that we have to look at is that $2 million goes unused at this time. And so that you know, there's an opportunity that could have been spread around or placed in somewhere, something else, and maybe protected some additional habitat. Member Kingston.
That's a good point. And I agree, you know, I said this, I think it was 4 years ago, that the critters don't care. We're doing this for wildlife. We're doing this for fish game and wildlife. The hunting issue is an important one. But that's not the main issue. What we're supposed to be doing is getting the best properties and voting on them and running them through our rigorous review procedures, which we've done. And we keep going back and going over all these other issues that really are not in our purview. We're about recommending funding for the best projects that we have. And if we don't recommend it, then how is that serving that piece of property? We don't have another candidate that's put up a proposal for it. We've already done this. We're at this point now, and we cannot control the legislature. We recommended them, and they will do what they have to do. And I trust them to do what they have to do. Our job is very simple, and we've done it through the rigorous process that we have. And if we vote it out, then we're not protecting what everybody as a group thought was something important to protect.
Further questions or discussion with Member Hartman?
Just in response to Julie's question, and you know, the way this went, the House stripped it out, the Senate had it in, and in conference committee, the Senate agreed with the House to get the bill passed. Predicting what will happen this year if the same path follows and it gets to conference committee is something, you know, that we can't predict. And so I don't know how to answer the question that you're asking, which is a really good question. How do we do the really good projects and get them through the legislature? And you know, this is a charged issue, to be sure. But, you know, I don't think the outcome is a known outcome at this point. I think some of the directions are, but the outcome will be subject to a whole bunch of negotiations at some point that you and I won't be sitting and participating in. And it doesn't answer the question of how do we make sure the project gets done if we believe in the project, but I don't think the foregone conclusion is the outcome.
Further questions or discussion? Thank you both for being here. Very helpful. We'll continue to go through the list here and see if there's anyone else that can give us a response to their item. And PA01 Grant Wilson, can you come forth? Thank you.
Good afternoon. Chair and members, Grant Wilson, Department of Natural Resources. We asked all of our program managers to stick with some of their other priority work today. So I'm here just to make some general comments. Several of the DNR proposals, and I think several of the other proposals that you see, have similar notes, specifically in regard to direct support services amounts, as well as personnel and travel occasionally, so depending on the program you're looking at. And what I generally would say is we're bringing programmatic requests. Often the staff that are included in those proposals are needed, so regardless of the amount that's being contracted or some of the smaller project work. And so there's a minimum amount of staff that are required to do the work. And so what happens in with reference to PA01 and others is we have reduced staff if we were able to a minimum amount to get the work done in the lower level of funding that was allocated. And what that does, obviously, is increase its percentage that you're seeing against the total budget. Similar in direct support services. The direct support services, we use a standard calculation. It's project-specific. Each project does a different but consistent calculation of direct support services. Largely, those direct support services cost things like human resources, safety, financial processing, those kinds of things. They're largely driven in our calculation model by staff time and staff amount. And so, for instance, in the PA01, you'll see a slight increase in the percentage. I think Member Kingston mentioned earlier the actual percentage of change for the total proposal goes from about 4% to about 6%. And the reason for that is when you put the numbers back in, the personal amounts remain about the same. And so that means that the roughly the direct support services is not going to change all that much. Thing costs like the actual cash paid out to landowners for fee title acquisitions and easements, we discount those from our model. They don't drive support services costs, overhead costs, and so we eliminate them. And so by having slightly higher percentage of staff, you're going to see a slightly higher percentage of direct support services in those programs. So as was mentioned before, we're certainly happy and we can plan to provide written responses to all the questions and comments, but I just wanted to make those general comments so you could understand a little bit of why that was a consistent note that you were seeing across our proposals. And I'm happy to try to field questions if I can.
Questions for Mr. Wilson?
Mr. Chair, thanks. Grant, just a quick question for you. I don't know if you're prepared to answer it, but it's regarding the DNR Forestry loan FA08. It's a revolving account. FA08, the revolving account. The question that staff had was, is 3 years long enough for this pilot program?
It's a good question, Mr. Chair members. We think so, but frankly, because it's a pilot program, we won't know for sure. We think doing the calculations and sort of charting out time, we think it will be enough time to get a start to see what we have. But I've asked our forestry folks to think more on that. So I would like to be able to come back with a more complete response, if that'd be okay.
Member Hartwell.
I would encourage you to lengthen the time so you don't have to come back at the end of 3 years and say, this was a pilot and it took us more. Let's get into it with our eyes wide open rather than create a problem for you from the start.
Mr. Chair members, I've encouraged them to do that.
As long as we're on that, I should just mention, to clarify, it says that NOFR not needed for involving lands, consider special appropriation language needed, Ranger Janelle. Let's just let you know that staff is speaking with Greg and Janelle and asking, we're going to be considering, I think we need to look at the consideration of whether or not NOFRs need to be placed or notice of funding restrictions need to be placed on each of these acquisitions if they are to be resold. So at any rate, what's the legality of that, the appropriateness? A notice of funding restriction. A NOFR notice of funding restriction says that if the land isn't used properly, it reverts back to the state. But if it's being resold again, then what appropriation is that?
Mr. Chair, Mark, you still need one for the easement.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be an easement, but not for the fee title part of it.
A different language.
Yeah, but it would still be related to the easement. Because at the end, you're going to be, DNR buys the land, sells it with the easement attached, so there's a different fee owner. The fee title wouldn't necessarily revert to the state, but the easement would if it gets to government. Yeah, it's not taken care of that. So but there's still a different notice, just a little bit different notice.
Further questions? Mr. Wilson? Thank you for being here. Nature Conservancy on PA04, Northern Tall Grass Prairie.
Good afternoon, Chairman Anderson, members of the Council. I'm Rich Johnson at TNC, and I'm here representing the program, the Cooperative Program of Fish and Wildlife Service today. So, we talked earlier about the sort of recommendations or questions asked in here, things that apply to the accomplishment plan, but what I can assure you is we'll go back and take a sharp pencil to them and look at those numbers. I was one of the folks who voted to take a pretty conservative approach to reducing these because it's just the fact that these programs, that the costs aren't linear. You take a dollar out of the appropriation, it doesn't reduce the costs proportionally. But I will say, as one of the people said, well, let's keep more flex in there, and I think we can go back and put those numbers again. We'll work with staff to figure out if that should be done now or in the June accomplishment plan phase. But, yeah, just to understand that a $7 million request, which was our original one, the costs of pieces of it are less proportionally per acre than if you go to a smaller project. So we just, big picture, want to say that with the $3,300 per acre protection in the prairie areas of the state, we think it's a really good value program. We thank you for your support for it. The other one there was just a comment on a match letter. That was there. I didn't know you could attach more than one letter. I'll go ahead and do that back in the office and we'll take care of that. So, any questions?
Questions for Ms. Johnson?
Yeah, I wanted to reiterate kind of the subject that David brought up earlier. It's better to overestimate and come back with something less. And TNC has had a problem with that before, where they were trying to cut the costs as much as possible, but then you get stuck at the end when it goes over by $100, and you have to be forthright about it. So, percent one way or the other, it's better to have too much and come back less, I think, as long as it doesn't screw up, the whole complexion of the project.
And the history is that we can work with staff to return the funds to acquisition we've done in the past.
Other questions or statements? Thank you for being here. Bob, come again. Thank you.
Hello, Bob McGilvery with the Trust for Public Land again, and I'll address the questions that were raised to the Cannon River Watershed Habitat Complex project. First, it's raised that the parcels identified exceed amount in fee acquisition budget. I think you'll find that in many, if not most, of the fee acquisition proposals here, that there is a number of parcels on the list, and the appropriation recommended is usually not enough to purchase all of them. So having less money for fee acquisition, what that will mean is purchasing less parcels or smaller parcels, less acres. And that interrelates some to the next question, which is that the personnel and service cost seems high, and they're not consistent with the percentage of funding restriction. As you heard from both DNR and the Nature Conservancy, if you change the percentage, it's not linear. There are personnel costs that go with having these programs function, and this is a program. So if you reduce the funding, mostly it's come out of the money for fee acquisition. So it doesn't translate into a direct percentage on the personnel costs and some of the other costs.
Efficiency
at
scale.
Exactly, that as well, efficiency at scale. And I would guess I would add that we've got several proposals, and this has come up for us on a couple of the other proposals and on many of the other groups' proposals too, so I think it'll be an applicable answer on some of the other ones as well.
Other questions or comments? Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
We move to PA 07, is Bill Penning. Okay. Can you address both PA 07 and WA 03, Bill?
Yeah, and I can probably also do ACUP at the same time. Bill Penning, Eastman Section Manager with Board of Water and Soil Resources. I was multitasking here, so. For the personnel not consistent with percentage of funding reduction, this is going to apply to pretty much all of the Bowser ones, and the answer, I think, is the same one that Grant gave. We're delivering programs, some costs are fixed, we scale costs where we can, and in some cases we can scale costs, so I think that is a consistent answer that you're going to hear from all the folks that are delivering programs. You wanted wetlands as well? Trying to find a number here. Personnel, we already talked about that. Stewardship, the number of easements changed, so the per easement stewardship set aside also changes on that. And I'm not even sure what the first sentence is, their breakdown between easements and RE indicated per council request. Mark, Bill, Sandy.
The council had asked at the last meeting that they break those costs down, and I was just pointing out that they responded by doing that.
Okay. And then there was another on ACUB, I think it was the last one that affects us. There's a statement in there about the trails question not being answered, and there was actually a technical glitch within your database that applied to both of us, and I talked with Grant. It also applied to Prairie Bank. We actually answered the question, and then it got deleted. and we caught it and re-answered the question and let Sandy know, but I think that by that time the materials had already been sent out to you, so that was just a, that was a technical glitch, so that has been addressed.
Questions? Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chair, just, and this would be a point to all three testifiers, I think you need to be careful in how you answer that question. I realize in some programmatic things, those costs are the same whether you get to buy so much property, but we got to make sure that the person working on the project, if they're only acquiring one-third of the projects, make sure we understand why, like in the case of ACUB, is that how you do that acronym? They've got feds they're dealing with and stuff, and I get whether you get $1 million or $4 million, you probably get the same amount of time working with the feds on it. But you're going to have one-fourth as much time probably with the property owners. So I think it's important. Our costs have to be direct and necessary for the project, you know. And I get where some of it changes, but we want to make sure that, because it almost sounded a little bit, and I even hate to mention this because I've been a proponent of being fair on direct and necessary. We're not covering overhead for the sake of covering overhead. I just wanted that to
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, you're absolutely right, and we are in fact are not doing that. But some costs, for instance, the cost of doing all the reporting that's required for LSOHC is pretty much the same whether you're doing 10 easements or 100 easements. It's that sort of stuff that we're doing. We're very careful to not just cover general overhead.
Other questions or comments for Mr. Penny? Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
PA 10, Steve, can you speak to that, please?
Good afternoon, Chair members. Again, Steve Hobbs with the Conservation Fund. Just to walk through the comments, I think the, some of the primary comments is just kind of what is our role at the Conservation Fund with this proposal. When we went back and looked at it, it made more sense to us and to the Minnesota Land Trust that we really look specifically at the conservation easement component and focus on that. I think that's where the most need is. We think we can find other places to find funding for some of those acquisition projects we proposed. And really, the landscape you guys were touring today, a lot of the landscape we're trying to work with, trying to get these easements for due conservation grazing and that kind of management on site. So it made sense for us to do that. And for us, the Conservation Fund, we have the personnel between me and Emily Nelson, who formerly worked for Pheasants Forever. We're kind of working this landscape a lot. So it made sense in our partnership with the Minnesota Land Trust for us to continue that work. And really, our job is going to be, when we're acquiring land on behalf of any of our other partners, from Ducks Unlimited, the Fish and Wildlife Service, to anybody else, also finding those opportunities where a conservation easement makes sense. When we tee up those opportunities to assist in that negotiation, to be able to pass it on to the Minnesota Land Trust. So that's kind of why it makes sense for us to be doing that work, getting things, creating opportunities for the Minnesota Land Trust with conservation easements and then passing it on to them. So first, I guess, are there any questions about that? I just want to help clarify what our role is with the Minnesota Land Trust. Great. As far as some of the other issues, actually the easement stewardship number really stayed the same. It's 7% of the total last before, 7% now, so that is the same. Personnel cost is a little bit higher as a percentage than it was before, kind of for a lot of the same reasons like Bill Penny was talking about and others have mentioned. Certainly we can take a look at that again, but I think that's probably in the ballpark of what makes sense. For us, travel, is the percentage was actually about the same as well. It's about 1% of the overall ask, and that's about what it's going to be this time, too. What else are we going to look at? And then, actually, the last comment, average cost for an easement proposal, $350 an acre. I'm not I'm not sure what that is. My math is it's about $2,900 an acre for the easement, so I don't know if there's something else, Joe or from Mark or Sandy, that you guys were looking at. But it's about $2,900 an acre is about what we're estimating for the cost of the easements, and that's on land that would normally be somewhere in the $6,000 an acre range. So that's, again, we're buying these easements. We have a better chance of protecting land at a lesser amount of money. Happy to answer any other questions.
Steve, are you going to be using the reverse bid model? Possibly, definitely.
We're going to give it a shot. I mean, that's something that has worked very well in different locations. We haven't tried it with this group of landowners out here. It's a little bit different in this case because it's not going to be a huge volume of landowners that we're looking at. They're going to be very specifically targeted because we're really looking to try to find those opportunities where there is a place that we can have a working grassland landscape that is adjacent to a large chunk of protected land. Again, a lot of the places we looked at today, actually, I could have pointed out several places where we're talking to some of these potential conservation grazers right in the area where we were today. So that's what we're looking to kind of leverage that. So the way we're approaching this is not so much to have people sign up for a program as is to be very tactical about where it makes the most sense to try to get a conservation grazing easement. So in one of those cases, though, just like we've done before, we're definitely going to get the best deal possible. And if that means looking at two or three different places that, from an ecological standpoint, are pretty much the same, we're going to do the cheapest of those three. And so in the same way that the reverse bid works, that's going to be our focus.
I'm back and away.
Other questions or comments? I think you've done it great. Thank you.
Chairman, council members, my name is Wiley Buck. I'm with Great River Greening here to address your questions about the Anoka Sand Plain Phase 4 proposal. Yes, as you've heard, largely these percentages we've lost economy of scale. We still have to send the project managers out to do assessments. On the scaled projects, actually, there might need to be more work as we have to spend a little more time prioritizing which acres we actually need the work the most and first. So that's the personnel, travel, and RDSS calculations that are heavily based on our personnel costs.
Questions? Well stated. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Kim, can you come give us your statement with regard to the deer hunters and FAO2.
Thanks for having me back up here again. Much like the other proposals, the personnel was consistent with the decrease. The reasoning for that is much like the other proposals. sorry, I'm a little nervous. If you look at it proportionately, it's under 2% is what our personnel costs for the proposal. With the decrease from $18 million down to $5 million, we do have minimum costs available from personnel that we need to account for, but we are very thoughtful on the amount of that personnel line.
Questions? Thank you for that statement. Is anyone from Cass County on FA06?
FA04. Yeah.
Please.
Chairman, members, I'm Rich Biskey with the Nature Conservancy. I'll answer the first comment question here and then pass it off to our partners here. The reason for the DNR land acquisition cost remaining the same is the acquisition acres and projects that we dropped were actually conservancy acquisitions in which we would retain a fee without PILT. So those do not have DNR review on them, therefore no corresponding charge to DNR.
And this is Bob McGilvery with the Trust for Public Land again. With respect to the personnel costs, it's essentially the same answer that I gave on the previous proposal.
And I'm Wayne Ossie with the Minnesota Land Trust, and our personnel line item, travel, and so forth are largely the same. They've been reduced, but at a higher level than what might be proportional to the reduction, in large part because, as a lot of other people have said, we still have to do a lot of the legwork. We're using a reverse bid process here, so a lot of the legwork in terms of setting up the RFPs, going out, ground truthing sites with landowners, and then optimally negotiating or pursuing projects in line with what their bids are. A lot of that really doesn't change whether you have or optimally accept two or three easements or a larger number. And so that specific number in terms of who is coming to the table, we don't know. We'll know that once we go through the RFP process. So we keep those numbers at a relatively high standpoint, and then we work through the process. And similarly, I think there's some questions here, maybe not here with respect to easement stewardship as well, and the number of projects that we ultimately do will be largely based on the bids that come in and where they are in the process, if they're donated, if they're partial donations, or if they're full appraised value. That will discern how many projects we do, and so the easement value or the easement stewardship costs we also tend to keep at a relatively high standpoint. We can always move those monies into other categories if we do fewer projects.
Questions for you, gentlemen? Very good. Thank you for your time. FRE01, the floodplain forest enhancements. Anyone from Audubon? Not today, okay.
Yep.
Shallow Lake, WA02, X Unlimited, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members. John Schneider with Ducks Unlimited. We had two comments. I'll deal with the second one first. Personnel and DSS not consistent with percentage of funding. Similar to other presenters, some of those costs need to be retained to process the grant and implement the program, but I would add to that that quite a bit of our personnel costs is engineering staff to survey, design, and restore wetlands. And some of the projects we will be able to fund will have some pretty large wetland restoration costs. So those personnel costs will stay artificially high, if you will. Not artificially high, but higher than the proportional reduction, because we're doing a lot of engineering work and we don't want to run out of staff to do that important work on lands we're acquiring. Regarding the outputs, I elected to be conservative in our acre projection, and we have not appraised any of these parcels yet, so the estimated cost per acre is simply that, an estimate. We had originally proposed 2,000 acres, and we received about 40% of the funds, 39%. I put in the accomplishment plan 600 acres because I wanted to overachieve, frankly, and I'd rather come in with 800 acres and say, looky what we did, you know, than come in and propose 800 acres and fall short. And with a slight change in land prices, we would fall short. So I can, having said that, I'm happy to change it to 800 acres as long as staff, especially because we deal with staff on the final reporting end, understand that if the market's changed and the appraisals come in higher, we're going to end up falling short on our acres.
Questions? John? Member Blackburn?
I think you say 600 acres in your accomplishment plan.
Correct. That's, we originally proposed 2,000 acres. 40% of that would be 800 acres. I'm hedging short. I debated 600, 700, 800 acres, but it's all relevant. We're going to buy as much as we can. We're not going to, we don't pay more than appraised value. So we're going to buy as many acres as we can, and I'm hoping that we'll come in at 800 acres and be able to say we exceeded our goal. I'd rather do that than say 800 acres and fall short. Whatever the council would like, I can modify it and change that number.
Better than you do.
Further questions or comments? Thank you, John.
Thank you.
HA02, Metro Big Rivers. Liam? Bob?
Hello, I'm Wayne Osley with the Minnesota Land Trust, representing the Metro Big Rivers Habitat Partnership. And Bob McGilvery with the Trust for Public Land. So I can address from the Land Trust, I see a lot of questions again related to the easement side of the equation. Here in the metro area as well, we're going to be moving toward a reverse bid process. It's going to have its own unique characteristics to it. But in large part, the underlying premise will be the same in terms of trying to get the best habitat protected for the least cost. So we'll be working with landowners that way. So many of the same things will come into play with respect to keeping personnel and travel at levels, in essence, proposed relative higher than the percent reduction. We will be looking to purchase up to three completed conservation easements, and so we're looking at the easements, the stewardship cost of $60,000 that reflects the three that were three projects, so that will keep it up at that level. Again, if we move to and only complete two, for example, we'll move the money elsewhere.
The objective question?
Yeah.
Wayne, did you say you're increasing the number of acquisitions, of fee acquisitions? And the reason I'm wondering is because the DNR land acquisition costs went up, or at least interest. I believe they went up. Yes, the actual budget went from $20,000 to $23,500, and your leverage decreased by $7,000.
And that's overall for the partnership as a whole.
Yes, yeah. I was just looking at the budget comparison report.
I believe the land acquisition costs, I know for the Trust for Public Land, they stayed the same. It appears to me that they went up by that $3,500 because it looks like Minnesota Valley Trust maybe forgot in their proposal to put any in and then added it to the accomplishment plan. I'm somewhat speculating, but just quickly looking at both the accomplishment plan and the proposal, that's the way it appears to me. I can certainly ask Deb Lewin to get back to staff on that question.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I think I can probably streamline a little bit, too. We've got one other question that kind of doesn't follow the others unless the other staff thinks of something or other councils. But the restoration of the upriver project, that was purchased back through monies of ML 11 and 12, but it evidently was not restored out of those dollars by the partner or otherwise. And you kind of explain that, why it's in here for restoration?
Yes. That project, the acquisition, was done by the Trust for Public Land, and we, again, did this through the Metro Big Rivers Partnership, and we have several restoration partners who specialize in restoration, including Friends of the Mississippi. So the plan was all along that Friends of the Mississippi would do the restoration, and so they're seeking funding to do that work, to continue that work. They frankly already started on some of it with previous appropriations from this council, but since they have an expertise in that area, they are performing that work now. So we try to work together as partners, each performing the services that they have greater expertise in.
Any other questions, staff or council? I think you've done it. Thank you. Mississippi Headwaters, Tim, is there anything else under yours that you want to comment on?
Mr. Chairman, Tim Terrell, Executive Director, Mississippi Headwaters Board. I think we answered most of your questions unless the council has any other further questions for me. Thank you.
Thank you. And I think the last one might be HA04, Leech Lake.
Right? Hi, I'm Wayne Ossett, the Minnesota Land Trust. What I'll say, I looked at the comments coming up here, and I think the big issue that hasn't been addressed elsewhere is the roads and trails question, and we will ensure that that gets answered and work with the program manager to get that information.
Good, Wayne. Thank you. Any other questions for Wayne? Senator.
So we would love to know before we ask another question.
Yeah,
I'm just kidding. You're doing a good job of keeping you sitting down and getting back on that right.
HRE01, the Minnesota Trout Unlimited. No, no one here for that. Very good. Anyone from the Sand Hill River Watershed District?
Thank you,
you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jameson Wendell. I'm a fisheries biologist for the Minnesota DNR, Red River Fisheries Biologist. I'm here. Dan Wilkins, the project manager, district and watershed district administrator, is unable to make it today, so he asked me to come and answer any questions there may be. The two questions that look like we're advancing the funds, and also that we did not adjust the even the acreage restored or anything like that with the accomplishment plan. The two are somewhat related, actually. We did just a brief update. After the last approval of advancement of funds, we were able to advance those funds to the Army Corps of Engineers, and they got the phase one of this project out for bid this fall, and bids actually came in below estimates, so we did have some cost savings there with the first phase of this project. What's that? Yeah, well, we're moving on to phase two now, so if we had not been, this is one of those where you had talked before about scalable projects, and this is one that, if it was not originally approved at the 100% level, we would have had to, you know, face some challenges there. And now with the lower costs coming in for phase one, with this reduced amount, we do anticipate that we will be able to complete the project now with this reduced amount. In addition to that, we are requesting an advancement of funds again. We found that this was significant advantages to being able to do that. Advanced funds to the Corps. It worked very efficiently to be able to do that. And then the timeline of when we were able to do that, it seemed like a good fit with a number of contractors did submit bids for phase one of the project. So it was a competitive process for that bid. I think part of that was just the time of year. It's, you know, later in the fall, a lot of contractors just don't have a lot of projects going on. They're able to do these types of projects in the winter. So we would like to match, follow that same time frame 1 year from now, so that later next summer, early next fall, we would be able to put phase two of the project out for bid, which we're working on design right now, finalizing the design with Army Corps of Engineers staff for the final phase of that portion of the project, and hope to get that out for bid next fall. And then we also think that there would be some cost savings too. The only other alternative would be requesting a loan from a bank, a short-term loan, and then obviously there would be a fair amount of interest costs, you know, with that loan if that was needed to be done. And also it likely would cause a delay, and we may not be able to follow the same sort of time frame that we did for this phase one of the project.
Questions? You're good. Thank you.
Thank you.
HRE 06, the Shell Rock River. Do we have anyone today? No? I think that's our last one. So we'll come back then. Further, with regard to the accomplishment plans, anything else that anyone wants to bring forth? Not? We'll move to the opportunity to address the council. And I believe there is. Anyone that wants to address the council at this time? Hearing none. There's nothing further to come before this council meeting. It was scheduled for the next meeting in December. And I will declare this meeting adjourned. Thank you.